And we're joined now by Gordon Lafer. His book is The 1% Solution, How Corporations Are Remaking America One State at a Time. Gordon is associate professor at the University of Oregon. And Gordon, you believe that the Citizens United 2010 Supreme Court decision was the catalyst. Why do you think this is the case?
Well, the Supreme Court in 2010 said that corporations can spend unlimited money on politics. Corporations already were probably the most powerful force in American politics even before that, but the corporate lobby's budgets have grown by 600% since then, have increased by six times. It's made a huge difference. It's made a big difference in federal politics, but a huge difference in state politics, partly because state legislative races are so much cheaper to buy. In most places, you can buy a state legislative race for $50,000 or $100,000 or much less, and that's a lot of money to normal people, but it's not much money to the big business lobby. So their influence has grown tremendously at the state level.
Why are corporations, big corporations, interested in statewide elections?
Well, you know, the federal government for most of the past decade has largely been deadlocked. There's only a couple of bills a year, significant bills, that tend to get enacted. The states have a lot more power than most people realize. I mean, I understand most people are basically bored to death with state politics and nobody pays attention, but they have a lot of power. States set the minimum wage, states set labor laws, states set unemployment insurance, states determine education funding and health care funding and Medicaid, and all of those things are determined by state legislatures. There's no filibuster in most state legislatures. And so while everybody's been kind of fixated on D.C., the biggest and most powerful actors, who are the corporate lobbies, have...
A listener asked Gordon Lafer whether the Bernie Sanders campaign of a year ago was a response to the forces that you say have overtaken our country.
You know, I think in different ways, both the Sanders and the Trump campaigns were responses. I mean, one can agree with one direction or another, but, you know, we've been in a slow downward slide for a majority of Americans for 40 years where life has been getting harder and wages have been either flat or going down. And I think that, that life is just too hard and people are looking for more dramatic responses than they've traditionally gotten from either party.
877-217-5757. Gordon Lafer, the book is The 1% Solution, and it's interesting that you mentioned the Trump campaign, and I doubt that many people would disagree with you. He tapped into something that was quite raw in our country regarding what's going on with the working people in particular, and that's how he won the election. But, of course, he is part of the 1%. How was he able to accomplish this?
Well, you know, when you have 40 years of downward mobility, I mean, for instance, 60% of men in America now have seen their real wages, their inflation-adjusted wages, go down, which means there's 70 million men who are working for less than the equivalent of what their fathers or grandfathers made. That makes people understandably angry, anxious, insecure, and that goes in a lot of directions. And Donald Trump, regardless of what he's done in office, which now looks like a big tax cut for the rich and taking away people's Medicaid and health care, the way he spoke was a way that spoke up for the interests of working people. And I understand why a lot of people voted for him, whether or not that was a good idea.
877-217-5757. There is still time to talk with Gordon Lafer. And if you'd like to send an email, talk@talklouisiana.org. You believe that unions in this country have been devastated. I don't think that's any great revelation, but what has been the political fallout of that?
Well, the country's been getting more and more unequal. The main thing is that since about 1980, we've had a situation where even when people work hard and work smarter in higher tech and higher education, what we see now is profits go up, corporate salaries go up, executives do well, but the people who actually do the work that create those profits see their wages either flat or falling. And a big, big part of that is because so few people have unions. Companies aren't charities. They don't raise wages just out of the goodness of their heart. And for the most part, what that takes is the power of people coming together to be able to have enough power to negotiate with management. And when there's no unions, you can't do that.
What about public schools? You have a major chapter on what you call the destruction of public schooling. Is it really that bad?
It's getting there. There's a tremendous amount of money that Wall Street wants to make by privatizing public schooling. A lot of different people come together in the attack on public schooling, but part of it is big banks who want to make money by lowering the standards of what teachers have to be, making those into low-wage, high-turnover jobs, or replacing human beings with digital technology and passing laws that say that digital companies need to be paid the same dollars as a regular school with a professional teacher, you know, teaching in person. So there's a lot of money to be made in the privatization of schooling.
Dan downtown, Dan calling 297-5633. You're on with Dr. Gordon Lafer. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Dr. Lafer. Do you find a similar situation in state legislatures to what we see going on in Congress, where the federal legislators, they pander to the corporate interests rather than looking out for their own constituents in order to get a highly paid lobbyist position upon leaving elected office?
All right. Could you hear him? He has talked about congressmen in particular cashing in after leaving the U.S. House or Senate and getting high-paid lobbyist positions. Is that something that has been a big part of this process that you say has not been so good for our country?
So first of all, the caller is absolutely right about Washington, D.C. It's a huge problem. It's the single most common thing that people do after they stop being either congresspeople or senators is go to become big corporate lobbyists. At the state level, you know, part of the reason the corporate lobbies are so powerful is that less than a quarter of Americans can even name who their state representative is. One of the ways politicians sometimes, if they want to do the right thing, can stand up to the power of money is when they have the public behind them. But in the states, almost nobody is paying attention. Nobody knows what's going on. And so the power of money goes much further. And some of it is also what the caller mentioned, which is people thinking, okay, when I'm done being a state legislator, what am I going to do? And very often, either that's being a lobbyist or being somehow else in the business world, that it's going to benefit them to be on the right side of the corporate lobbies.
You note that populists did well, so-called populists, both in the Democratic and Republican primaries last year, in Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders. But there are those who say that it can't sustain. And in other words, Trump, it may have campaigned as a populist, but do you think he will govern as one who is out for the middle class or the little guy? Is that the way it's going to work out, or is it going to be something other than that?
Well, I think it's good that he canceled the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, but you know, mostly since he's been in office, he's been governing with the elite. That's certainly, well, like I said, what it looks like. The dismantling of health care is kind of killing off something like Medicaid and using the money for a tax cut for the rich. But I think it's important to look behind the politicians and behind the parties even at who's the real power behind that. And in Washington, D.C., of course, it's not just Donald Trump. It's also the Congress and the Senate. And Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and almost everybody in the Congress and the Senate is indebted to the big corporate lobbies because that's where they get their money to run for office from. And so we need to think of these not as the circus of personality that tends to be how people see President Trump, but as those rational corporations who are really behind the politicians in Congress, and that's where the laws are being written.
Gordon Lafer is the guest. The book is The 1% Solution. Joseph in New Iberia asks, if you believe the two-party winner-take-all politics is what causes large amounts of money to be so effective?
I don't know, to be honest. I'm not sure. I don't know how we have to do something to get money out of politics, and you know, the place where you see it is people vote for candidates for all kinds of reasons. But when people have a chance to vote on specific issues, there is a majority of both Republicans and Democrats who support a higher minimum wage, who support a right to paid sick leave, who support fair scheduling, who support small classes for our kids in public school and trained teachers. So the corporate agenda is not popular on an issue-by-issue basis, but they've been able to use their money to get people elected.
Patrick in Baton Rouge. Good morning, Patrick. You're on Talk Louisiana with Dr. Lafer.
Yeah, Doctor, I think corporations like unions are made up of people, and you want to limit what corporations contribute to state government, but what about unions? Are you okay with unions contributing vast amounts of money with no limit to politics as well?
So I think there are two important differences. One is the caller is correct. The Supreme Court decision in Citizens United legally said both unions and corporations can give unlimited amounts of money to politics, but there's no union that was sitting on a big pile of cash just waiting for legal okay to spend it. If you look just the Fortune 500 corporations, their annual revenue is 350 times as much as all of the dues collected by all the unions in America. So it's not a comparison. I also think it's very different to have a membership-based organization, a mass membership organization that has some democratic process in it, and that doesn't have to just be unions. That giving money is a very different thing than a corporation which is not democratic and which by its constitution is only designed to enrich the shareholders.
Dr. Lafer, how would you answer those who say this is a wild-eyed leftist from the West Coast who isn't thinking clearly? How do you respond?
I read the book. I mean, what's happening is happening. You know, people may disagree with me about what would be better or what's the right way to fix it. I think the fact that the corporate lobbies have tremendously increased power since Citizens United and are writing laws in order to make themselves richer and make life harder for everybody else, I think those facts are indisputable, and I don't think that's a right or left position. There are directions that I think we should go in as a response to that, and people may have different ideas about that. But the basic facts of what's going on, people should read the book or go online. You can find those facts a lot of places besides my book.
We're about 30 seconds from the finish line, but independent of how damaging you believe this has been, the influence on taking over state legislatures, it was a brilliant political strategy, wasn't it?
It was very smart. And, you know, one of the things they did is they focused a couple months after Citizens United on taking over in 2010, because that's when the census was and when the districts were redrawn and a lot of gerrymandering happened. So for people who are bored by state politics, I would say if you could wake up for just 1 minute, wake up in the fall of 2018 and 2020, because the people elected then are the people who are going to redraw the district and hopefully do them a little more fairly than they were done in 2010.
Thank you, Gordon Lay, for the book, The 1% Solution, How Corporations Are Remaking America, One State at a Time.